In today's episode of the Sixers Beat, Rich and I go over what the Sixers did on the opening day of free agency. Talking about PJ Tucker, Daniel House, and Trevlin Queen, breaking down their strengths and their weaknesses and how they fit with the Sixers, and going over where that leaves them for the rest of the offseason. Enjoy the podcast. All right, welcome everybody. This is Derek Bodner, joined by Rich Hoffman on the Sixers Beat, a part of the Athletics Podcast Network. So the Sixers handed out a little bit of money here tonight. PJ Tucker got a little bit more money today.
Yeah.
Daniel House got a little bit more money today. Trevlin Queen got a little bit of money today.
Like a real little. I mean, a lot of money in general, but compared to the first two people you talked about, a little bit of money.
Correct. You know who didn't get any money today, officially? James Harden. Going over the contracts, PJ Tucker got a 3-year, $33 million contract, fully guaranteed. It was the non-taxpayer mid-level exception that we have been talking about for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. A lot of reporting earlier in the basically previous 2 weeks that he was going to get a 3-year, $30 million. Previous reporting that only 27 of that would be guaranteed. That was all, I mean, it was mostly correct because of years and the amount was close, but not exactly right. Came out a little higher than that and fully guaranteed. The usage of the biannual exception, which is a smaller $4.1 million contract, was something we mostly didn't talk about because up until about 36 hours ago, we didn't expect James Harden to take this big of a discount. So that went to Daniel House. And then, I mean, Trevlin Queen is someone that wasn't even on our radar. Maybe he should have been because he tore up the blue coats in the G League, but he was not someone that we had our eyes and ears on. I guess we sort of have to start with how this was all became possible. And that's with James Harden. Now, he has not signed. That is little more than a formality at this point, but it doesn't sound like he's going to sign this weekend. But what we do know is that he took a pretty massive pay cut. I think right now my numbers say you'd have to take at least $38 million to fit all of this in under the apron, which they are now hard capped at because they used both the non-taxpayer mid-level and the biannual exception. So they have to stay under the $157 million apron. And in order to do that, James Harden would have to take a contract that starts at $38 million or less. There's a little bit of wiggle room there because they have some players here who are on non-guaranteed contracts. Charles Bassey's on a non-guaranteed contract. Isaiah Joe. Now, Trevlin Queen, there's a little bit of wiggle room there, but somewhere in the mid $30 million range. And I think when you, and I have my suspicions, but that could change depending on what the Sixers do here over the next couple of days. And when you and I sat down here, maybe like 2 weeks ago, I want to say, I think what we said was best case scenario was 3 years, $100 million. We said probably more realistic, $120, $130, $140 million. But best case was sort of like a 3-year framework in the mid $30 million range. And we did sit here and say, I don't know how much leverage James Harden has to get significantly more than that, but we worried that it might get higher than that for various reasons. So I think when you and I sit here and look at this, this has to be pretty close to the best case scenario, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, we'll see what that number comes out to be. We'll see how many years are tacked on that if they add a little money on the end of it.
Shams Charania did mention a possibility of basically a 1+1 where he could become a free agent again next year.
Yeah. So we will have to see what the details are on that. I believe there have been other reports that it's a 3-year deal in the mid $30 million, which I think that's been pretty consistent the whole time. But let's be real. The reporting on this for a while was that he was going to opt into his player option.
Up until Wednesday morning, the reporting was that he was going to opt into the player option and then extend for 2 years.
And it became, like you mentioned this earlier, it became very clear that something was going to have to give because this PJ Tucker reporting that Mark Stein started a few weeks ago and Keith Pompey also had, it was going to happen. So if that was going to happen, something had to give. Like there was going to be a trade of some sort, or James Harden was going to chop some money off of his 22-23 cap hit. And that is what has happened. I don't want to say I think people are maybe a little bit too quick on the Harden is doing this for the team. I just want to see what the final terms are on the end of this. But look, like he could have just opted into his salary. And if you mentioned, like, if it's a 1+1, he's a free agent next year, he could have just taken $47 million and bet on himself to get a big contract. For him to take less money this year, and you mentioned the apron, there could be some other trades that create a little more space. We'll see. Again, not a lot of assets to move around, but yeah, certainly could be some other trades. He's got to make less money than that in his first year, and he's probably got to make a few million less dollars. You can't be right up against that thing. No. Like, you need a little bit of wiggle room. So for that to happen, for the Sixers to add two rotation players, it's a big deal. And I'll just finish by saying this is kind of what I already just wrote about. It's in the editing stage at The Athletic. I really think the Game 6 exit interview / post-game press conference from Embiid and Harden was more telling than you thought. Like, you have Harden saying he'll do whatever it takes to build a championship team. Now, look, he might be getting more money on the end of it, but he at least worked with the Sixers to get this done on the first year of this.
And then you got Embiid publicly standing for PJ Tucker.
Tucker and tough players and wings. And that is exactly what happened. And they're in lockstep with each other. The first thing got them the second thing. So it's, we'll get into whether it's good or not, you know, whether, you know, what the Sixers are trying to do here. But I do think the act of Harden opting out was, I think that worked out for the Sixers for sure.
Look, and I think there's been some people really pushing back on Harden taking less money and saying, well, he's getting more guaranteed. First of all, if it does end up being a 1+1, this is part of the reason why we should really withhold our commentary too much one way or the other on the virtue of James Harden giving up money. If he does end up taking a 1+1, he's risking a lot of money. Because if he opts out after this year to hit the free agency again next year, he could have just taken that $47.4 million option, been the same place as a free agent next summer. So if it does end up being structured as a 1+1, he did legitimately just cost the Sixers or cost himself $10 million or whatever it ends up being. So the Sixers could go out and build a deeper team. But even if it is, let's say there wasn't a market out there for him to get more than, let's say he ends up signing 3 years, $110 million or whatever. Let's say there wasn't a market for him to get better than that. I'm not sure. I think they're probably, he is still James Harden as much as we might, but maybe there wasn't a market for him to get out there. But he could have held out as long as possible to try to squeeze the Sixers for every dollar they could. And if he holds out and doesn't agree to that massive pay cut, and we have to go into July 5th, July 7th, July 10th, and he won't agree because he's holding out for more and more and more.
Gotta imagine how horrible that would have been.
Well, you don't get PJ Tucker. You don't get, even if you have the money at the end of it, you don't get Daniel House.
I'm forgetting about them. I'm just talking about us. But yeah, you're right. Keep making your point. But man, thank God this got done quickly.
He has to have this agreed upon in place before it. I know nobody tampers. He has to have this agreed upon and relayed to them beforehand that he has to basically give up the week or two or three that he could have tried to push for leverage to get every dollar they could. By agreeing this early, agreeing to a below market deal early, he gives them the chance to go out there and be, I mean, look, when you and I have Woj and Shams and a couple other people on notifications, the Sixers moves with House and Tucker were some of the first notifications we got all day. They can't be that aggressive if they're still negotiating, we're doing this late at night, and haggling with James Harden because he feels like he is a superstar who should get every dollar he's owed. And for him to agree to that early on in the process, it allowed them to be aggressive. It's I think you have to credit him. Even if, I mean, look, you and I, 2 weeks ago, go back to it. We said, we don't know how much leverage this guy actually has. You should play a little bit of hardball with him. The fact that you didn't really have to play hardball with him and he just agreed to it right off the bat, it really helped the Sixers.
Look, we'll see. Will there be a catch with the guaranteed money at the end of it?
There could be a fourth year, like $10 million guaranteed. Yep, something like that.
We'll see. But it is, I do think there is like a certain Philadelphia sports fan who I think generally is like smart, but we're preconditioned to negativity to the point where they try to take the opposite opinion just to be contrarian. And I think this was good news, like for the most part. I think what happened here was something like the best case scenario. And when we talked about this a few weeks ago, we brought up, like, are there going to be hurt feelings here? You know, this is he just going to want to take the money? Like, this is, these are human beings that we're talking about. Oh, Shams bomb. Andre Drummond finalizing a deal with the Chicago Bulls. There was a rumor he was coming back today.
There was. Did you, like, I think the maybe, not the first one, because the first one came out an hour before free agency, which we'll see how that plays out. But I think it was maybe the first one after 6 p.m. was, or second or third one, real close to the beginning, was DeAndre Jordan. And oh my God, when I got that notification, I had a mild panic attack.
Yeah, let's talk about that for 30 seconds. Oh, God. Can you believe how quickly, and Denver did it?
Like, yeah, I don't
know. I know there's not... There aren't two Jokic's, but man, could you go from a skill level drop off? Like, that goes from 99 to 0 on the skill level. It's pretty bizarre.
Yeah. It would be like, and if we had Zach Lowe on this podcast and he turned it over to us, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, I read a piece the other day about Denver's bench being weakened with that 2-for-1, essentially 2-for-1. Good for Ish getting to the 15th team he's on, but 2-for-1 trade.
13. I think it's only 13, which is an NBA record.
Yeah. And two stints with the Sixers as well. But yeah, I've heard about their...
under protest, but we don't have to get into that one.
I read about their bench being weakened, and man, if that's another member of their bench, uh-oh, that's not great. Okay. But yeah, but I do think there is a class of fan that just is bracing for the negativity, and I think for Harden to do that was something that I don't take that for granted. Like, that's not something we knew was going to happen. Like, let's be real too. Even if he does get another year or, you know, some extra money tacked on, or there's some other thing for him here. When has James Harden ever had the team first mentality? You know, like, when he got criticized for quitting on two teams. By the way, the second team he quit on, it looks like he got out of there at exactly the right time.
Yep. Yes, it does.
So, yeah, it's weird that the Sixers are... Look, I don't want to pretend everything's perfect here, but the fact that they're having a pretty normal offseason and they're making just depth moves that seem to make sense, and they seem to have a pretty straightforward plan with these physical, quote-unquote, tough 3-and-D type players, catch-and-shoot three-point guys, it's a weird feeling. I mean, it's cool. I mean, we're here at 10 o'clock for free agency. I'm drinking a beer right now. I'm doing the Zach Lowe one beer. And, you know, it's funny. I was drinking this. I had a bunch of old beers in my fridge, and, I was wondering whether to go with the Founders that I believe the Sixers gave me or a Miller Lite. And I would rather have a Miller Lite, I think, but they're so old, I just didn't trust it. And so I went with the Founders, and it's, you know, it's okay. What's your favorite light beer of the three?
I don't really drink a whole lot of beer. I truthfully don't. If I had to pick one, like, it would probably be Miller Lite of, like, the mainstream ones.
Yeah, all right. I get in a lot of arguments with my friends over the three main domestic beers. Miller Coors and Bud.
They are all acceptable, and I don't have any stronger of a liking for any three of them than that.
Clearly, I haven't drank enough of them.
Let me put it this way. In college, I was strictly Miller Lite. Strictly.
Yeah, all right.
But I'm not in college anymore. Not by a long shot. Anyway, that is not my area of expertise. Where were we going?
You still have the right opinion, though.
I guess, is there any one of these that surprised you the most? Because I think if you looked... Well, I mean, I know which one surprised you the most. We weren't even thinking about Queen. That one's a little bit of a gambit, but we'll see how that works out.
I mean, we know which one surprises the most. House, because Tucker, we knew was happening.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess dollars and cents-wise, years-wise, how do you feel about the Tucker one? Let's start off with that.
Okay, yeah, let's get into PJ Tucker, because I think... I mean, there's a lot to unpack there, right? So I'll say this. This would be the way I would phrase how I feel about it. If you get the guy that played against the Sixers in the playoffs last year, I think it is a great move. It is a legitimately great move. I don't know if you're going to get that guy, because last time I checked, PJ Tucker is going to turn 38 in next year's playoffs. So I don't know. But I would say, and a lot of people kind of fight back on the toughness. It's like, well, you know, let's get a good player in here. Like, let's get some skill. I think the toughness part is an intangible quality that we could argue about for a long time. Here is something that is not an intangible quality. This team, all of last season, when Ben Simmons was sitting out, and then after they traded Ben Simmons for James Harden, they had one massive weakness. Against these apex predator wings, they had nothing.
Nobody. Yep.
Nothing. It was, I mean, I always talk about the time they put Seth Curry on Jaylen Brown in Boston because he was their second best option in the starting lineup, which, by the way, they won that game. That's just how weird the Boston Celtics were this year. I mean, that was part of it. And then you got to the playoffs, and Tobias Harris is your stopper. And look, I think he deserves a lot of credit for embracing that role a lot. We'll see if he keeps embracing kind of a diminished role or something else happens. But if he's your stopper, you got nothing. You got nothing. You got Jimmy Butler making fun of you on the way out. So is PJ Tucker going to be able to stop Jason Tatum, Jimmy Butler? I was going to say KD, but I don't know what conference he's going to be in next year. So who knows about
might be
that?
Might be a teammate.
Yeah, who knows? I don't think the Sixers have enough.
I don't think the Sixers do either.
Yeah, I think that's. I actually think KD would have some interest in playing here.
Yeah.
But,
no, yeah, I think he definitely likes and respects Joel Embiid. It's just, you know.
Just don't have enough.
You've got two things. You've got Tobias Harris, who's a negative value contract, and then you've got Tyrese Maxey. And Tyrese Maxey's great, but they don't have a single draft pick they can trade, and rebuilding teams usually want draft picks.
Not only that, the Nets have their draft picks already, too. It's not even like all your draft picks are gone. It's like, we already got those things, man. So is PJ Tucker going to be able to stop any one of those guys? No, but there is a baseline.
He will make their life pretty freaking annoying or pretty difficult.
Absolutely. That's exactly where I was going. There is a baseline level of resistance you need to do to make those guys work, make their lives miserable, and hope that your three offensive stars, Embiid, Harden, Maxey, can put you over the top in a game. That's what the thing is here. And honestly, was there somebody with the mid-level, the big mid-level that was better for that? I don't think there was, actually. I actually like PJ Tucker's specific fit with this team. I get that he's a limited player, but I really like his fit and his skill set and how it does not overlap with the stars. So
yeah, and look, I think when we have a better idea of how free agency around the league is going to shake out, we can have a better read on whether or not they had better options available with that full tax or non-taxpayer mid-level. I do think PJ Tucker is overpaid. If you're sitting here going, oh my God, 3 years for a guy who's going to be 40 at the end of it is terrifying. I agree. That's going to be a pretty, I mean, most free agent contracts, except for when you can lure a star away, are pretty terrifying. That's sort of the nature of, and by definition, free agency. Like, you have to be willing to bid, not always, because, you know, team needs and contention and all that stuff plays a factor, but usually you have to be willing to pay more money than the rest of the teams out there. And that makes these inherently pretty risky. And for Tucker, and with the aging curve he's on, and look, he might age a little better than other players, in part because his game's not built on speed, in part because he hasn't played a lot of, for a 37-year-old, he hasn't played a ton of minutes because he came in the league pretty late. And that set shot, that's, you know, plant yourself in the corner and shoot, he should be able to do that for a while.
Oh, that thing is so ugly.
But it still should, like, it's a concern for sure. But you're building for this year and next year. And you need, and this is something we talked about with the cap spike and maybe retooling in 3 years in 2025. You need to maximize these 3 years while keeping the future not completely compromised. And I think Tucker, for what they need, is a pretty good option. You can play a little small ball five. You can switch a little more than you have in the past. You get a little more, you know, spreading the floor. It is, and for people, look, we've complained so much about their backup five options. It's nice to have somebody who can actually credibly play a little bit of backup five and spread the floor.
I didn't even think about that. That's true, though.
It's just another option to throw in there with B-Wall Paul and Charles Bassey.
It's a better bad option than they've had.
Yeah, it's not perfect, but it's better than George. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. And it's a guy that your two best players want on the team. And look, if you're talking about Joel Embiid and keeping him here, and I don't think you should, I don't think getting the player that your star wants is always the right move, because what your star wants is to win. And if those two aren't the same thing, then he might be happy now, but he won't be in a year when it doesn't work. But I think PJ Tucker will do both. I think it's both a player that Joel Embiid respects and also one that will help them in the playoffs. And really, I think when you look at this, people are going to balk about, oh, what should be the starting lineup, blah, 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 blah. Calm down. I don't think you necessarily want to start PJ Tucker, in part because I think you need to keep him fresh for the playoffs. And he started a lot of games here, but you need to keep those minutes down so he is fresh for the playoffs. PJ Tucker is here to be a playoff player. And I think he will help them if he still can play at the level he did last year. I mean, if he can play at the level he did last year, I know he can help them. The question is, can he do that for 1 year, for 2 years? Probably not for 3 years, but hopefully you can get 2 years out of it. And again, look, there might end up being a better option out there for the full taxpayer, full non-taxpayer. Blah, I've talked about this for a month and I'm still screwing up. There might end up being a better, more talented player out there that you could have gotten for the full non-tax player, but I think he is a pretty good fit.
I think he's an awesome fit. And yeah, there might be a player who exceeds expectations and has a higher upside. But if it's somebody like, did TJ Warren sign the night? He's kind of the guy I was thinking of.
Yeah. I don't remember. First day of free agency is always a little bit of a whirlwind.
So we'll see. But that would be an example of somebody who I think is a lot riskier. Even with PJ's aging curve, I think TJ Warren's health is riskier. But also, Derek, I can't say too, like, I cannot say this enough. You do not need another 25-point-per-game score. You have guys that are going to put the ball in the basket. You have Tobias Harris.
You have four guys who can average 20-plus.
Who might complain that he's not running pick-and-rolls even when he's scoring 18 points a game on easy shots. Like, you need somebody who is willing to handle
those
tough assignments.
Not get fucking destroyed defensively. That's what you need in role players. And you look at who they added, Melton, Tucker, House. Those are three players who can do that. And when you look at, like, people look at House and, oh, well, he was on three teams in the last year. He was on 2 10-days, blah, 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 blah. And to be honest, I'm a little surprised that Morey didn't sign him when he was available last year. Is he overpaid as well? Yeah, probably. But you look at the success that he had alongside James Harden in Houston, and you look at how James Harden can create open corner threes for these guys. He can make a spot-up shot. He can defend credibly. And adding three players into your rotation who can do that is, I think, pretty significant. There's so many times on this, and I realize all three of them are probably now not going to be able to shoot because that's the Sixers' way. But there are so many times when you're looking at the bench, you're going, well, shit, this guy, Furkan can't defend, and also he hasn't made a shot all year. And now you should have neither of those problems. It is good to get depth. And I think a lot of people are looking at it now and they're saying, well, that's great, but if James Harden isn't who we thought he was, then it doesn't matter. And that's true to some degree. I don't think you're going to change that because Bradley Beal was staying in Washington. I always felt that was going to be the case. And outside of what happened with Kevin Durant, there really isn't a star available on the market. But I think what this leaves them with now is if James Harden can be better than he was last year and reclaim some of that gap between where he was in, you know, 2020 before the injury and where he was last year, if he can do that, if he can play better, if him playing alongside Joel Embiid for a longer period of time can help them, you know, the synergy between them, you now have a better chance to take advantage of that. Whereas before, even if James Harden played better, I didn't think you had the depth to really contend. Now, if James Harden plays better, you have some of the depth where you can take advantage of that and credibly be a team who can be a threat in the Eastern Conference. And again, is that going to matter if James Harden continues his decline? No, but I don't think there was any way to avoid that.
I feel like there was a lot of lessons learned and you're seeing them in these moves. You know, Morey said this, we're not sure about one-way players anymore. Look, again, may these guys not be able to shoot? Yeah, maybe they won't be able to shoot because it's the Sixers. But PJ Tucker is a 36% shooter for his career from three. So is Daniel House. I forget what Melton is, but obviously over the last couple of years, he's hovered around that 40% mark.
39% the last 2 years, yep.
And that looks like he has made a breakthrough with the catch-and-shoot stuff, in my opinion, from watching him. All right, well, if those guys can shoot, I think they all can defend at a pretty decent level, and that's all you need. Like, limited guys who can just catch and shoot and bomb threes is what you need around those guys. So, yeah, I think it's kind of the opposite of, you know, I mentioned this, how 2 years ago they went for Danny Green and Seth Curry, and really their whole offseason thing was, let's just get shooting around Ben Simmons and Embiid. Like, let's just get that. It's very clear that they were like, All right, now that we have Harden and we have an ascendant Maxi here alongside Embiid, let's get the 3-and-D type role players. Let's try and get deeper with that. And Harden taking the haircut has helped them do that. Let's just add something here, too. You mentioned the playoff version of Tucker, and you need him for that. Let's say you can trust House, too. Like, we talked about how many players can you trust.
I think you can, by the way. Like, I think a lot of people looked at him and, oh, well, he shot poorly for the Rockets and the, you know, what, he played a game with the Knicks or whatever. It doesn't matter. But he shot poorly with the Rockets before going to the Jazz. I think when you look at it, he shot, in the 3 years he spent with James Harden in Houston, he shot 37% on high volume. Well over 50% of his attempts from three. Well over 50% of his field goal attempts were from three. He shot 37%. He goes, Harden leaves, he shoots 34%. Comes back to Houston this past year, shoots 29% from three. Goes to Utah, shoots 42% from three. Do I think any of that is a coincidence? No. I think he is a spot-up catch-and-shoot shooter who needs somebody to create those looks. And when he was on, you know, the Rockets without James Harden, there wasn't anyone to really create those looks. So I think now that he's back and playing alongside James Harden and playing alongside Joel Embiid, he will get better looks. He will look more like the, you know, House from, you know, 2018 and 2019, than the one you saw through periods.
Yeah, and I'm counting it right now. Harden, Harris, Embiid, Tucker, Melton, House, Maxi, maybe Milton, and one of the backup centers. It's 8.5 if you can get it, right? And that, you know, that doesn't even count Thibault and Niang, who, look, I think there's going to be a pretty deep regular season team, too. When you add two guys who I'm very confident they can fit in a regular season rotation, yeah, I think Tucker has more value in a postseason rotation where he can make those kind of tough winning plays. But this team's pretty deep, man. Like, yeah. I think they're...
Yep, I agree.
If they didn't make any other moves, if they just signed Harden and kept this team, I think this is going to be like a 53-54 win team just right away. Like, I think they're going to win a shit ton of regular season games and do it kind of stress-free, too. You know, like, last year, there was a lot of leaning on Joel. There was a lot of leaning on Seth Curry early on. And then, you know, then when Harden got here, it became a little bit easier, I would say. Now, I think this team is pretty deep, and that's what Harden has done for you. A little less so in the postseason. You need your role players like House and Melton to step up. But I don't know. I think from the very few resources that the Sixers got, I don't know. I think they did pretty well. I what they're doing. It's what we asked of them, too. You know, it's...
I think there's just so much said of star hunting. And so every time I went on the radio, I had to talk about Bradley Beal. And I'm like, he's staying in Washington. Why are we talking about this?
Also, he's not a star. Like, I'm throwing
he's overrated. I agree. But I think so many people got it in their head that they're going to trade for another star. And I just don't think that was real. I mean, you go back to what we said a couple, probably like right after the season. I think what they need to focus on this summer is depth. And maybe eventually that can then be relayed into a star if one becomes available. But right now, I think they need to focus on depth and mid-sized contracts. I think they did a pretty good job of it. And again,
they did what we asked.
Yeah. Their championship equity is going to be driven by Joel Embiid's health, Tyrese Maxey's growth, and James Harden getting back to what he was. That's 100% true. But they are better positioned to capitalize on that if any of those things do happen.
I just, going into another playoff series where they had nobody to guard Tatum, nobody to guard Durant, nobody to guard Brown, you're probably not going to win. I don't really care who your stars are. That if you have just such limited players, and by the way, Danny Green was a good wing, not good enough to do it. Just not. PJ Tucker, better one-on-one defender than him against those guys. So, yeah, I'm fairly optimistic about what they've done. Like, I think they got to figure some stuff out, and obviously Harden getting back to that level is the biggest thing for next season, but I think what they've done is pretty good. It would be funny. I don't want to hear Embiid in a couple of years be like, man, we signed PJ Tucker when he was 37 to a 3-year deal.
This is your guy.
That was a dumb move. Yeah. I think that was bad, like he did with the Butler and Simmons thing. I don't know. Maybe he would be feuding with Harden in that scenario. But yeah, like you said too, also you get his guy and help him out. So, yeah, look, it's like a couple of years ago where these are not sexy moves, in my opinion. These are not going to going to lead ESPN.com or whatever, but I don't know. I think Daryl Morey has a pretty good feel for fit. I trust him because of what he did a couple of years ago when he put Danny Green, Seth Curry around those guys. And I don't know. On paper, it seems like it makes sense to me with these guys.
Before, you had a team built around Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, and now you have one built around James Harden and Joel Embiid. And I think this one fits the current skill sets of your stars much better. Much better. Again, that doesn't mean that they're perfect. Like, I think House and Tucker are both overpaid.
Yeah.
I think Daniel House is one of those guys who has just enough of a handle to really fuck up. Like, I think you're going to watch him try to do too much, and he's probably going to frustrate you at times. But he can fill a catch-and-shoot 3-and-D role at a size and a position they didn't have before.
Yeah, I think they've done well. Let's take a quick aside here. What do you make of this whole KD mess?
It's going to be fascinating, because the funny thing is, and this is something that Bobby Marks of ESPN was pointing out a lot, Ben Simmons is getting in the way of them getting back what they want. Like, because they can't take on another designated rookie extension guy. That limits them quite a bit, especially when you're a rebuilding team like they will be if they trade Kevin Durant. So I wonder if, you know, if I'm Brooklyn right now, I'm saying we're not trading him now. Give us some time. Maybe that's the rest of the summer. Look to move Ben Simmons. Even if you're getting 25 cents on the dollar, look to move him so you can maximize a KD return, or at least just wait until some team really ponies up, because you can't trade him for not great return. And right now, we'll see. This all came about, and I don't want to react too much now. But it is, man, it's just crazy what happened with that big three. You know, you look back on it, a global pandemic unleashes Kyrie Irving's inner conspiracy theorist, which torpedoes the season. James Harden gets the first real injury of his career. And next thing you know, you're looking at Ben Simmons, on again, off again, Kyrie Irving, and who knows what else as a Brooklyn Nets. It's just I feel like this phrase is used too much, but that 30 for 30 one day is going to be fucking amazing. It's going to be amazing.
They should air it back to back with the process. Yeah. It's, it'll be interesting to see what
it was.
They
just
get
real funny, because like after Kyrie Irving said, "All right, I'm coming back," everyone thought like, "All right, well, that's it." Kevin Durant was still like, "No, I'm done. I can't. I can't wait until he comments on this." Has he tweeted? I don't follow him on Twitter because he just does a little too much arguing with fans. Has he tweeted about this yet? I haven't been checking.
I don't think so. I think he's been quiet about this on this day, which probably is it's pretty hard
thing
for him.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Because it is a smart thing to do.
He likes to argue with the fans. So, yeah, I'll be very curious to see. I mean, you know, you hear all these people say that a package for Kevin Durant is going to be the biggest trade package of all time. And I mean, logically, I think yes. But when I hear, like, I heard on Low Post the other day, they were like, or Zach Lowe was like, "I'm starting with Scotty Barnes." And I'm thinking like, starting with Scotty Barnes? I like Scotty Barnes, but man, I get it. He's under a rookie contract for 3 more years. So it would probably be Scotty Barnes and everything that Toronto has draft-wise for the rest of time until they can,
and that,
can't
that
do
is,
anymore.
That is really where the Sixers come up short. Like, they just can't trade draft picks, relegated to a couple of swaps maybe, but you're not going to swap because Sixers are going to have the worst pick.
Man.
So it's not.
Houston has a chance. If they hit on some of these picks, they have a chance to be pretty damn good.
Oh, yeah. Raphael Stone's having a party right now. He's happy as hell.
And it's unbelievable that he's having a party after, I mean, Brooklyn, if Harden and Irving, if just one of them stays healthy in the 2021 playoffs, they're cruising. They're cruising to a title. They're, like, laughing their way to a championship. If all three of them are there, like, we're talking fo-fo-fo type shit. I mean, that was, and now they're not there anymore because of Kyrie Irving, if we're being honest. But, yeah, it's just,
that's why these draft picks are being traded around like they're, you know, Monopoly money. And sometimes it works out, right? Jrue Holiday gets them a championship. Giannis is there for a long time, works out fine. Other times it ends up being like, you know, James Harden in Brooklyn, and it's really tough to predict which way it's going to go, which makes stuff like the DeJounte Murray stuff, like, it's a little bit surprising and a little bit risky.
DeJounte Murray. I mean,
three first round picks.
How about Brett going back to San Antonio? But
yeah. Yep.
Makes sense. But
it does make sense. I think today was probably like the last day of his contract with the Sixers, so the timing of it also makes sense.
Yeah.
You don't want to give up that contract to go be an assistant. That doesn't.
No. No. He enjoyed his life over the past couple of years and earned it. So, yeah, I just think it's crazy to watch all of this chaos and it not be the Sixers. I mean, I don't think the Sixers ever really reached this level of chaos. They had.
I mean, Burnergate was pretty fucking weird. That was pretty chaotic.
It was pretty weird. And the Sixers really.
It wasn't really with the players, though. It was different. It was different.
No, it was just crazy stuff happening to the organization at different levels. And it was just over such a prolonged period of time. But you're right. Burnergate is up there. Fultz forgetting how to shoot is all. We go down the list, all that stuff. But I would say in terms of like the central players.
Yeah.
We're talking about a bunch of like sevens and eights. The Nets have been on like a 15 out of 10 crazy for like a year now. I mean, just. Pretty insane stuff. So, yeah, just...
Then again, Ben Simmons holding out for an entire year when nobody's ever really done that was pretty crazy, too, and that wasn't that long ago. It doesn't reach this level. I agree with you there, but...
By the way, when is the new... When is the CBA up?
24, I think.
Man, we will not have a job that year.
I think there could be a holdout, yeah. Don't all go unsubscribe at once, but I think there could be a little bit of time off.
No, we got you'll forget about it in a couple of years when it happens. But man, is there going to be the lockout of all lockouts? And these contracts are going to look completely different after this. I think.
Yeah, that's good. And the league is definitely watching. Anyway, anything else that we should sort of hit on here? I think we'll probably have another podcast here during free agency to, I guess, be a little more structured.
Yeah, I mean, it's just weird because Harden opting out, we know that he's going to have a lower salary, but we don't know what it's going to entail.
Yep.
We don't know if there are any other moves on the roster. But here's one other point I made in the past couple of days, too. Daryl Morey, this is a different way of building a team than he has done this over the past few years. Because, and I think he was right to say this, when the Sixers were lacking a little bit of depth, they didn't use their mid-level exception in 2020, Daryl Morey's answer was, oh, we didn't really like what was out there. And the biggest mistake he saw at that time was that people tried to make their team by the first game. And you have a full year to evaluate, adjust, do all of those things. And I think that's right. And obviously, it wasn't like the Sixers struggled in the regular season that year. They were the number one seed. When you are hard capped, you basically have to build your team.
Yeah.
In the offseason. Now look.
And I think with the hard cap, I think the knowing that the Ben Simmons trade was looming, I think that very much factored into his complete unwillingness to be hard cap.
And this was before that, though. That was, maybe.
Are you talking about 2 years ago?
Yeah.
But he was star hunting. He was James Harden hunting at that point.
Yep. So now they have to build their team. You know, maybe there are a couple trades that happen later here, but when Harden signs that contract, the Sixers are basically going to have their team.
Yeah.
Could there be a move that happens in the regular season? Could there be like a minimum signing or a little small trade? I think so. But my bet would be that is your team just because, like we said, the hard cap is restrictive. Can't go over it. Can't trade big salaries. You would have to find a pretty perfect trading partner for a big move to be made after that. Yeah, and
you have to receive less money than you send out.
And I don't think that's a bad thing, but it just, I wanted to note that it is different in how they have gone about this.
Yeah. And I think that is a significant part of why James Harden hasn't signed yet. Because, you know, I think if you're sitting here worried about why hasn't James Harden signed, first of all, they don't make those signings and agree to those contracts and leak those contracts and talks, you know, real figures with those contracts if they don't know that James Harden would be willing to sign for what it would take to get to give the Sixers enough room under the hard cap to make those contracts a reality. But it also means, like, it's not a secret how much room they have left under the apron. Like, there's not much negotiating that would have to happen between James Harden and the Sixers to lock this in. I think it was Woj who said that they plan on meeting over the weekend to hash out these details. That meeting, whether it happened in person or not, has already happened. Otherwise, they wouldn't have offered these contracts to Tucker and to House. My gut, and this is just gut, I wonder if they don't think that there's a chance that there's a trade out there that they could make, or at least a possibility. It doesn't mean that there's something like imminent or anything like that, but a possibility of a trade that they don't want to agree to specific terms with Harden because that number of what they might have might change. And again, does that mean there's anything imminent? No, but I think they're keeping the Harden thing as their last move just in case. So I kind of don't expect that to happen here in the next day or two, certainly, because I think they're going to see what's out there.
And it just continues to hammer home the point that Harden is playing along with them. He is being, whatever happens with this contract, at least on this part, he is being very cooperative. And like we said, I think they have made good use of that cooperation. Like they've actually gotten real stuff. So that's where we are.
Sounds good. Thank you, Rich, for jumping on, and we will talk to you soon.
See you, man.